Hi, everybody, and welcome to FNS Wrestling Podcast bonus episode, ROH 19th anniversary review. I am your host on another solo mission tonight, as Jack does not really watch Ring of Honor. He struggles with any sort of empty arena wrestling, so it'll just be me. I did check out the pay-per-view. I also probably will talk about the weekly program. I just finished watching that as well. That one won't take too long. Wasn't a strong offering this week, so I'll probably get through that pretty quickly. But the pay-per-view itself was pretty lengthy, felt to me. I checked it out, if I'm being honest. I didn't see the first hour free until the end. I started with the actual pay-per-view, I guess, and then went back and watched the free offering that was on YouTube. But I will review it in order. I'm not going to go through it in great detail like we do on the Saturday show. If you are a new listener, on Saturdays, my son and I do an episode where we cover the Wednesday Night Wars in depth. So we're looking at AEW, Dynamite, and NXT. And then we also talk about the week's Impact show and ROH. He does a bit of trivia. We talk about anything else that kind of comes up. He always updates us on wrestling figures. He has his own segment there as well. So if this is your first time checking out the podcast, please check out a Saturday show. We're up to, I don't know, closing in on 40 episodes, I think. We really enjoy it, so we're just always looking for new listeners, obviously, so feel free to check us out. But that being said, I guess it is time to get into a pretty quick look at Friday night's ROH 19th anniversary show from Ring of Honor. So let's do that now. Okay, so on the first hour free up on YouTube, we started out with, what do they call it, a four-corner survival match between Eli Isom, who just this past week on their weekly program picked up a surprise win over Ray Orris. So that was, I was quite surprised by that. Danhausen, who if you don't watch ROH, is an interesting, very unique character. He's got his face paint, he speaks in an affected voice, he's kind of dark and creepy a little bit. Carries a jar full of teeth, which he uses in the match generally. I'm not quite sure how I feel about him yet. I'm open to him. I'm leaning towards not being a fan, I think. But at this point, I haven't seen him enough to fully decide. Versus Brian Johnson, who I really like. He's just angry and one of the angriest men in wrestling. Cuts really great, intense, loud promos. He's basically one of those guys. I think part of his story is that nobody in the locker room even wants to be in the same room as him, sort of thing. He's so unlikable and angry, so I quite enjoy him. And the fourth competitor is LSG, who he's fine. He doesn't stand out to me really in any way. So I expected Brian Johnson to win this and maybe Danhausen, I guess. I don't know if he signed or if they plan on pushing him or not, but those were my two sort of thoughts going into this. So anyways, we did get a code of honor to begin, and Brian Johnson did his trademark, a lot of yelling at other people. Basically, there was late near falls for almost everybody involved in this match. The action was pretty decent, standard like four-corner thing. Lucha rules also applied here, so if somebody left the match, anybody else could just go in and take that spot. So the finish sort of came when Brian Johnson, I believe he crawled under the ring and went out the other side, came in, Danhausen was his opponent in the ring at that point, poked him in the eyes, and then hit his process, it's called the process finisher, which I believe is a brain buster, if I remember correctly. And so he scored the pinfall win over Danhausen. What was, I think, about a 10-minute match. And I thought it was pretty solid. There was some decent action in it. Again, I'm not a huge fan of a few of these guys. I think Isom has a lot of potential, but he's still really raw. I've already talked about Danhausen, and I think the right person won here. Brian Johnson, I think, has the highest ceiling of these four, in my opinion. So I understand why they would give him the win. And it was a solid match. Nothing spectacular, nothing I think you have to go out and see, but a decent outing by all of them. And yeah, I would just say solid would be the perfect word for it. We then get a whole bunch of promos. There's really only two matches on this first free hour, so I'm not going to go through all of the promos that happen. You basically have Lethal takes a turn doing one for the Foundation. Then there's one LFI with Rush, Kenny King, La Bestia del Ring. And then you've basically got EC3, talk a package about that, and the Jay Briscoe feud, a little bit about Flip Gordon and his issue with Mark Briscoe as they have a match coming up. Then there's a summary of the Matt Taven and Vincent feud. with some comments from Vincent, basically. And then we get a Dak Draper promo. And then it finally, we get a little bit of the commentary team hyping up the Dalton Castle and Josh Woods match that will be on the actual pay-per-view. And then all of this parade of packages. Again, none of them are really bad. It's just none of them were outstanding. If they were, I would say, oh, you have to go see this. They were fine and nothing was terrible. It's just not worth recapping in detail, I don't think, right here. So they finish, with a Dalton Castle promo, basically before we get into the next match, which is one I was looking forward to seeing, which is why I went and sought out the first free hour, because I didn't know exactly where this match was going to fall. But I'm a big fan of it's Shane Taylor, Moses, and Khan. So Shane Taylor Promotions versus Mexi Squad, which is Bandido, Flamita, and Rey Oris. And this is for the six-man tag titles, which is kind of a unique thing to Ring of Honor that I think is cool, like three-man team titles, basically. So that's what this was for. I quite enjoyed this match. I thought it was pretty fun. I'm a huge Bandido fan. I think he's amazing and is the next thing that they really need to push. He and Dragon Lee, to me, are really exciting to watch. This was sort of the story of issues within the Mexi Squad as Flamita, fairly early on, there's one move where all three of them are trying to do a move on, and he just stands there, so he's sort of out of sync and not doing what the rest of the group is doing. And there's further hints of that throughout the match, right? That there's some sort of issue with Flamita. Bandido and Oris seem to be working well together, but the issue is with Flamita. So anyways, so lots of good action in this match. At one point, I think it was Bandido's on the ropes, and he actually stacks the other two Mexi Squad on his back and then hits a splash. I mean, obviously he wasn't jumping super high. He was just kind of falling from where he was, but it was still cool. So all three of them performed a splash there. Interesting in this match, Shane Taylor, who I think is terrific, he took a lot of the offense here. And I don't know if that's maybe because he is the most experienced and probably skilled of his group at this point. So he can sort of deal a lot better with the high-flying, fast-paced stuff that the Mexi Squad are going to put out there. But he took a lot of the offense, I felt like, in this match. But anyways, we get a top rope jackhammer at near the end here, which is Khan's new signature slash finisher, which looks really cool. So he hits that on Flamita, and then Moses and Khan hit there. It's like an assisted DDT, basically, elevated DDT finisher. And Flamita is pinned, so Shane Taylor, Moses, and Khan retain the six-man tag titles. So after the match, the tension that had been building between Mexi Squad continues to build. Bandido goes over to check on Flamita, but Flamita sort of shoves him away. They finally gets up, shoving Bandido. Oris is trying to step in between them. He has a microphone now and just talking about calming down, and they keep sort of arguing. And then basically they're going to settle this sort of with a three-way match on the main card. So the idea is that they're going to deal with the tension before it escalates. They're just going to request a match and put it on the main card of this pay-per-view, which I think is fantastic because these guys are awesome. And I mean, at the point I watched this, I had already seen their match too, because I did watch it out of order. But yes, this is a nice little announcement. And I don't know if the storyline's sound or not. The idea that clearly we're having trouble, so let's just have a fight about it and then go back to being normal. I mean, I guess there's something there to be said for that. But yeah, I thought this was a pretty fun opener, a fun match. I enjoy Shane Taylor Promotions quite a bit. I think the two young guys are getting, Moses and Khan, are getting a lot better and have a really cool look. So I thought this was good. And Mexi Squad are just pretty fantastic. So a good match. Now we move to the actual main card, right? And it's Ian Riccaboni, obviously, Caprice Coleman, and also the addition of Rocky Romero for this on commentary. So we have a three-man team for the pay-per-view. I don't think he was on the most recent episode, but I also struggle to focus on commentary in any meaningful way. I generally just lose track of them, especially if I'm keeping notes for a podcast. I really don't notice commentary, so forgive me. So the opening match is Kenny King versus Tracy Williams for the ROH TV title. So this is where I found out, and this was a huge disappointment to me, because Dragon Lee is quite possibly my favorite competitor in this company. I think he's fantastic. So he is not on this card. I imagine it's true. I don't know why they would choose this if they were making it up. A ruptured eardrum that required surgery, and he can't travel, obviously. So no Dragon Lee, super disappointing to me. And that affects two matches tonight because they're defending the tag team championships later and his ROH TV title here. So Kenny King is fine. I'm not a huge fan. So this match went from something I was very interested in to something I was like, okay, it should be somewhat good. So yes, Kenny King is defending on behalf of Dragon Lee. And basically, it's a pretty solid match. Both of these guys are very, very talented. I like Tracy Williams quite a bit. I didn't know much about him before the Pure tournament, but I do like him. We basically have the end comes when Amy Rose slides the belt into the ring between both men. King goes for the belt, but Williams basically, I think he was supposed to hit the pile driver on the title, but Kenny King sort of hit the title with his hand at the last second and moved it. So maybe he was moving it out of the way. I don't know. It looked like the setup was for Amy Rose to make the mistake of throwing the title in at the wrong time and for it to actually cost Kenny King the championship, which it does here, I guess. But he, again, I think he was supposed to be pile driven, I guess it would be, onto the belt, but the belt wasn't there. So I think that was the plan. Not 100% sure. But regardless, Tracy Williams wins. So he kind of surprisingly, because he's not even facing the actual champion, which is kind of an interesting situation, but he wins what was a pretty short match, to be honest. There's no way it was 10 minutes. It had to be under 10 minutes, but a decent little match. Again, I hate to use the same word, but it was solid, like a solid match. If you have to see it, it's not a waste of your time, but it's nothing you need to rush out and look for either. The next match is Mark Briscoe versus Flip Gordon. I forget where this even stems from. I think EC3 used Flip Gordon to help him interfere or annoy the Briscoes at some point because EC3 is involved with the Briscoes. I think that's where this came from. This was a decent match. I didn't really think it was that great. Flip Gordon is quite talented, but his current thing is that he's not really using his high-flying stuff anymore, that he's more serious or whatever it is. So it was decent. The finish came when Gordon delivers a low bro to Briscoe and then hits him with his, I forget what it's called, his finisher, and he gets the win in what was another fairly quick match. It was pretty forgettable, to be honest. I'm not a huge Flip Gordon or Mark Briscoe. Like, Mark Briscoe's solid guy, awesome tag team, but this was felt like a filler match on a pay-per-view, and it probably was. So it was, for that, I guess it was okay. Nothing, again, that I thought was fantastic. Then we get Dalton Castle and Josh Woods, which I actually didn't really want to see because we've seen it multiple times already. So Josh Woods is an amazing amateur wrestler. Actually, Dalton Castle was too, I guess, is the story. But Woods is kind of focused on the Pure division. And so Silas Young, a veteran ROH guy who since even the last time I was into ROH before I took a break from them was there back then. He's sort of mentoring Josh Woods, and his whole point, and I kind of liked it for this match, was that this isn't a Pure contest. So Josh should be using all of the professional wrestling tactics that are available to him to beat someone like Dalton, which is pretty solid advice, I think. And that Josh is more just trying to win through merit and through Pure rules kind of thing, even when he doesn't have to, I guess. And Dalton Castle is sort of on a bit of a downswing, I guess, and just looking to prove, as he's a former champion, that he's still got it. I think we now know that his contract is up, and I don't think he's re-signing with ROH, but that's okay. So this match, again, I wasn't thrilled about being on the card, but I actually quite enjoyed this. I enjoyed the interaction of Silas Young along the way, like telling Josh to throw him into the barricade, not even to cheat, but just to use things that are available in professional wrestling matches, right? That Josh Woods isn't doing because he's stuck in this sort of Pure wrestling mindset. So I like that whole idea. At one point, Silas encourages Josh Woods to use a chair, but Woods declines the chair, obviously. So you can sort of see where this is going. It became a little bit obvious as the match continued, but that doesn't mean that it was bad. I actually thought this was kind of enjoyable. So the referee ends up having to duck out of the way. It looks like he's kind of late getting out of the way. Actually, it was kind of well done. Of a charging, I think it was Woods. Anyways, they're about to run into him and he has to get out of the way. So then we basically have, as Woods gets shoved away and is running towards the ropes, right? Facing the ropes, and Silas Young because the ref had to sort of get out of the ring to get out of the way of this, isn't looking, obviously. And Young uses this opportunity to swing a chair and hit Woods as Silas Young is on the floor. He just swings the chair as Woods' heads come through the rope. I feel like I did like the worst job possible of explaining that. But anyways, Castle then takes this opportunity and rolls up Woods and pins him. And I know I'm a huge... If you listen to the show, I do complain about the distraction roll-ups a lot, and this was a distraction plus cheating roll-up, but I actually didn't mind it in the context of this. It's just Silas Young is frustrated with telling this young kid who has all the talent in the world, right? Like, Josh Woods is an absolute beast, and Silas is just trying to give him that one, in Silas's mind, his heel logic, he's trying to give him that one thing that he's missing, which is just take advantage of the situation you're in. If you can throw a guy into the barricade, you do it. If you can ram his head off the ring post, you do it. These aren't even cheating tactics. They're just things that you should be doing. So he's had enough, and he snaps, and he takes out Josh Woods, and I'm sure this is going to lead to a feud, and that's fine. I think Silas is still pretty good in the ring, so I'm okay with that, and I liked, despite me often complaining about distraction finishes, I like this match, and I like the story it told. So then after that, yes, Silas Young is sort of delivers a promo. This is my one issue. The promo was fine. But Josh Woods had to lie there like he was in a coma for however long this took, 2-3 minutes maybe. And basically that he's been teaching Woods lessons this whole time and Woods isn't really listening. And that this last lesson was how to be a real man. This idea that, you know, you just got knocked out and lost. So again, decent little promo from Silas Young, but it made Woods look a bit ridiculous because he had to stay lying on the mat here. Next, we get EC3 versus Jay Briscoe. And just to give you some background, I've been not a fan, is an understatement probably, of EC3's characters lately, both here and when I was seeing him in Impact as well, the whole storyline with Moose. I don't get what he's doing. It's especially now, he talks about honor constantly, but I always hearken back to the one episode where he was on commentary doing his usual rant about honor and nonsensical, as verbose as possible, full-on thesaurus on the go. And they asked him, okay, what's your definition of honor? And he didn't have an answer. He said there is no definition or something like that. So that it perfectly sums up EC3 to me. He thinks he knows what he's saying, but he doesn't really have anything behind it. He just thinks he's giving these dazzling promos, and he's not. But anyway, so I'm not an EC3 fan, and I feel bad. I say this every time. I do think he's a good professional wrestler. I do think he can pull off a much better character than this. So it's not him, it's the what he's choosing to do that I have a problem with. So anyways, EC3, Jay Briscoe, somehow, again, it's really unclear. Jay Briscoe's looking to something honor with Jay Briscoe. He won't shake Jay Briscoe's hand, and now Jay's to the point where he won't shake EC3's hand because EC3 won't even look him in the eye. Again, I'm unclear on this storyline, but anyways, the match, I'm torn on the match as well. I think I liked it, but as I was watching it, it's really, really slow. It's a couple moves and then we stand around for a few seconds. A couple moves and then we're both exhausted and can't do anything. One move and then there's 15 to 30 seconds between moves at times. Yet somehow I think it might have worked. Near the end, EC3 is just taking repeated high impact moves from Jay Briscoe and laughing. His laugh is really bad, I find. Maybe I'm just biased against this character now. It's hard to tell. Maybe he's doing a great job, but his laugh to me sounds really fake and bad. And I don't love that he's taking moves that finish people and just sort of laughing about it, but that's the story we were told here. So lots of this laughing for the latter half of the match. Again, really slow, methodical offense, basically. So the finish comes when Briscoe pokes his eye, hits him with a clothesline, a discus forearm. He throws finally this running kick for another near fall. He stands over EC3. EC3 gets to his knees and offers his hand, right? So now it's kind of like somehow, because you've kicked his butt hard enough and long enough, now it's sort of honorable, I guess. And I think, again, EC3 has an idea somewhere in there, but the execution is brutal. So as he offers his hand, Briscoe shakes it, picks him up, hits the J-Driller, which I always think looks cool, and pins him. And then Briscoe and EC3 shake hands sincerely after the match. Aw. So, again, I'm not sure. I can't believe I watched this a couple days ago and I still don't know. I think I like this match. I just hesitate to recommend it because it's very possible that someone would come back and say, I watched on your recommendation. It's so slow and plodding, because it really is. But there's lots of high impact moves in there. There's lots of offense in between lots of nothing. But some of the nothing, I think, is part of the story because they're just beating the heck out of each other and they're exhausted in between moves. So I think there's a bit of a story there. So I'm going to say I liked it. If anyone watches it and feels strongly about it, that would be great to let me know. You can always contact us, fnswrestling@gmail.com or fns_wrestling_podcast on Instagram or right on the YouTube channels where I've gotten the most comments by far. I always reply. For sure, usually pretty quickly as well. So I'd love to hear anyone else's thoughts on this match because I'm torn, but I think I liked it because I don't want to be too hard on EC3 because I know I do dump on him a lot, but I don't think he's bad. And I think this match was pretty good. I'm going to say it on the record. Pretty good match. Okay, so that takes us to, as slow as that match is, this is the exact opposite. You get the three-way match between the Mexi squad, almost called the Mexicools. Wow. For any of you that watch WWE long enough, you know where that comes from. Bandido, Flamita, Rey Horus in a three-way match. This was insane. This was an absolute sprint car crash. So many things going on here. At one point, there was, what was it? I actually paused it and went and showed my son the 20 seconds. It was like an electric chair set up with a cross body. So the person's in an electric chair, guy goes off the top rope, cross body, electric chair, but then it's flipped into a poison rana to the person that's holding. Anyways, it was crazy. There were multiple things here that were nuts. Lots of offense, so fast. These guys clearly know each other really well, so they could really just sort of let loose. This was probably a 10-minute match. I really enjoyed it. So the end sort of came when Bandido performed an Around the World Hurricanrana on Flamita. For a near fall. Then he followed up with this sort of GTS style thing and then hit what is his finisher, I guess, which is the 21 plex, they called it, where the opponent, it looks cool, the opponent has to be set up sort of, which is sometimes not the best thing for a finisher, but the opponent sort of bent over holding the middle ropes, I guess catching his breath or something, and Flamita flips onto his back, uses the rope, flips back, and hits a rolling German suplex with a bridge. So it's kind of cool. And so Bandido wins, which I think is the right move. I think that guy is a star. And after the match, Flamita declines to shake hands with his former partners and sort of walks off. So we're led to believe that this is probably the end. Again, this match for sure is a spot fest. People, again, could watch this and disagree with me and say, like, this is just what's wrong with wrestling. This is just an indie car crash of a match where everybody's getting their stuff in. Yes, that is true. But again, on a show that's not full of that, I'm perfectly okay with that. My ideal wrestling card is like all different types of matches, so everything feels fresh and nothing feels repetitive. So one absolute spot fest out in this show, I have no problem with it. I really enjoyed it. Next, we get what I guess is ROH's first foray, maybe, I think, into the Cinematch. And even that being said, it is pretty basic. They just sort of switched venues and are, I guess it's in an old hall that Matt Taven versus Vincent in an unsanctioned match, which seemed to be all the rage right now. So this was in some sort of old small hall or something that I think these guys used to perform back in the day. They came up together sort of idea. So it starts out with Taven sort of arriving to this place and going inside. And there's even a banner set up that says, "Welcome back, Taven," in there, I think. So it was obviously them fighting all over this little place. And it started out with Vincent up in the second level where the seats are, I guess, the balcony. There's the word we're looking for. In the balcony, sort of taunting Taven. And then Taven's being like, "I know this building, you know, really well." So he thinks he can hide somewhere he can't. And sort of going looking for him. Basic stuff. They're sort of fighting all over the place. Interesting choice by ROH to, they have no soundtrack, no commentary. So part of my problem with the Moose EC3 one in Impact was the music they chose to play, I thought was awful. And then my problem with the most recent match, what was that, Sting and Darby Allin I love the match against Cage and whoever it was, Starks. But my only issue there was the commentary at the beginning. I got used to it by the end, but over top of the beginning, I thought was awful. So ROH made the decision to go with neither of those things. It was just the two guys fighting and obviously picking up the audio of them yelling at each other and whatnot as it happened. So there was fairly basic stuff going on here. You can probably tell I wasn't super impressed with this match. The finish comes. They had earlier set up tables on the main floor outside of this ring that was here. And they were both up on the balcony above the tables. And they're sort of get to the edge fighting, right hanging off the edge, basically. And some big bearded guy comes. And I felt like I was supposed to know who it was. So I was glad to find out that I wasn't. Because sometimes I'm like, I just don't remember things very well. But he is new. So he comes down and basically pushes them both off of the balcony. And yes, it was a far fall, like it was a full story, and no, I don't want to take that fall, but it was just two guys falling feet first onto two tables that had been set up from one story above. And again, I'm not looking to do anything close to that, but in terms of the big moment in like an Extreme Rules or whatever you want to call it, unsanctioned match, it wasn't that fantastic, to be honest. So this big mystery man comes down. And he sort of picks up Vincent off the ground and just carries him out like a small child out of the building. And it's over, so there's no finish to this one, just like there was no finish to the Moose EC3 that was really similar to this. So not a huge fan of this. I didn't think there was much enjoyable going on in the match. My favorite thing was probably Vincent talking during this match. And just, he sounded pretty cool. But it was all really basic stuff. I'm going to run you into this wall and throw you into this, and I'm going to set up tables, and nothing really amazing in this. And then to not even get a finish either was pretty frustrating. So I didn't love it. No surprise. Not a big fan of this match. Then we get to, there is some promos here. Basically, Quinn McKay, the big thing I will talk about, she's in the ring with Maria Kanellis. And her title is, I forget what Kanellis is, something about talent. Anyways, she's going to have a tournament to crown a new women's champion this summer. And then there was a graphic, it's the summer of 2021. And then she invited, she's saying people, women from all over the world are going to compete in this. So then Angelina Love and Mandy Leon come out, who are Allure. Like, I know who Angelina Love is from TNA and other things. Mandy Leon, I don't know well, because there was a period of ROH where I just couldn't watch it, and I think it's the period Mandy Leon was in, because she doesn't seem familiar to me. So then basically, there's some back and forth between those two, and Angelina Love obviously thinks she should just be given the title probably or whatever, have some advantage because she's so amazing, and Maria points out that she hasn't had a match in a year. And she'll give her a bye. What comes out of this? Sorry, I'm sort of rambling a little bit for no reason. What's going to come out of this is she's going to give Angelina Love a match. And if Angelina Love can win the match, then she can have a bye in the first round of the tournament. And she announces, to my surprise, that her opponent will be Quinn McKay, the announcer. Not commentator is not the right word. So, but she always does the intros and everything. So that'll be interesting to see. Obviously, Love does not take this seriously. She just kind of laughs it off and then stares at McKay, and that was basically it. So interesting setup there. We then get the Pure Championship match, which is Jonathan Gresham versus Dak Draper. So the story here, if you don't watch ROH, Jonathan Gresham is like the absolute like pure wrestler's wrestler. He is like literally 5'4", but he'll just fold you into a pretzel at any point. Basically, he wears a big squid mask on the way to the ring. Dak Draper, on the other hand, he has an amateur background, but he's like 6'5" or 6". So the contrast in these two guys is immense. The match was pretty good. I find Draper has really cool offense, and I sound like a super nerd saying this, and I'm nitpicking the poor guy. But for me, everything else is lacking. His selling is lacking. His fake stuff, like when he goes to execute a clothesline that he knows isn't supposed to make contact because the guy's going to duck it or whatever, I think they look really, really bad. So I'm kind of torn on him. Obviously, he looks impressive. He looks like an athlete. He can pull off his super arrogant gimmick really well, actually. So there is hope there. Gresham's pretty awesome. This match was pretty good. I didn't absolutely love it. You had Draper applying the mile-high muffler repeated, which is just a stretch muffler. where, what was the finish for this one? It was basically, did he choke Draper out? I believe it was. Yes, he put on a sleeper, right, at ringside. That's what it was. So basically, Draper didn't tap out, but the referee checked on him, and he was out and stopped the match. So it was a long match. That was part of my issue. This one felt quite lengthy to me. Some decent work by both guys, but again, Draper isn't my favorite. And Gresham, he kind of has that one style down, but this was a really long match. Gresham retains. Decent match, nothing fantastic. Then we get the tag team championship match, another one that was a disappointment to me because we're replacing Dragon Lee, who's one of the best, with his father, who, though a talented wrestler, is obviously not in his prime at this point. So Bestia Del Ring and Kenny King are defending with Amy Rose with them versus Tracy Williams and Rhett Titus for the ROH tag team championships. And this is basically, we get a pretty normal tag match. It didn't look great, some of the offense. Bestia looked okay at times, and other times, not so much. So we get King with a leg lock on Williams. Titus dives from the rope, drops a knee to break the hold. Titus tags in and knocks Bestia off the apron with a boot. Williams hits King with a pile driver. Titus applied a full Nelson, but Bestia breaks it up, and then we get Titus and Bestia are in the ring. Bestia basically, again, here we go with the LFI and the cheating. Bestia gets Amy Rose to slide a chair into the ring as the referee clears the chair, and Bestia is sort of mad at Amy Rose, so furthering this story that she's sort of having some miscommunications with this group and they are not a very forgiving group. So she's getting yelled at by Bestia at this point, and then as he's distracted yelling at her, Titus puts in what I can only describe as one of the worst full Nelsons I've ever seen applied. But it gets the win here. So I did not think this was a very good match, I'm not going to lie. Some of the parts between Rhett Titus and Kenny King were pretty good because those guys have a history. They're one of the more famous tag teams probably in ROH from back in the day. So I thought the segments they worked together were really good. Bestia Del Ring didn't look great to me. The full Nelson though, man, like, I don't know. How do you not know that you can't put it on this guy and you shouldn't choose this as your finish would be my question, because it did not look good. Sorry, I just realized I didn't have the laptop plugged in and it shuts off randomly. So let's do that. So yeah, it was, he couldn't get his hands around Bestia's neck, I guess. So he's kind of barely got it applied, you would say. It looks like when it's been applied and the guy's fighting out of it and he's gotten the guy's hand, the applier's hands, like 8 inches apart, maybe even more. That was Rhett Titus, and that's what took Bestia down and got them the win. So I was disappointed in this match, not only because Dragon Lee wasn't in it, but because it frankly wasn't great. It wasn't a great match. We then get Roosh, the main event, obviously. Roosh versus Jay Lethal for the ROH World Championship. So Roosh is the mega heel champion, leader of LFI. Cheat all the time, whether you need to or not, just to catch you up if you're not an ROH person. And Jay Lethal is leading the foundation, right? They're looking to have pure wrestling. They're looking, so the antithesis of Roosh and LFI is the foundation, which has led to the two leaders of these groups here for the championship, which is a pretty cool story. I really do like Roosh. I hadn't seen him much because, again, he's been the champion of ROH in an era I just couldn't watch before the pandemic and before they've sort of rebooted things. So it's been kind of cool to get to know him and actually LFI for me, kind of for the first time since starting this podcast and reviewing this show. I do like him. He's a very good wrestler, very good charisma, really easy to dislike in the way you're supposed to. And just a fun character to play, to just cheat constantly and take every shortcut available to you, even though you're probably talented enough to not need it. That's a fun character to do, and I think he does it really well. Lethal, I love in ring. I've never connected with him in any other way. I find him, his character and stuff feels insincere to me pretty much no matter what he does. But in the ring, he is terrific. So I was looking forward to this match. And I thought it was really good. You had the standard stuff where Roosh is cheating, running him into barricades. And one thing I should say is that Lethal personally had asked the referee, like, whatever you do, kind of don't disqualify Roosh, right? Because this obviously would benefit Roosh. He will retain the title on a DQ, and he's 100% going to cheat a whole bunch of times. So Lethal was basically like, it doesn't matter, just keep the match going, don't stop the match. So you get, he's run into barricades, these barricades doors are slammed on him, he's getting whipped and choked out with the cables from under the rope, as usually happens. So all of these things are happening. Lethal gets in a whole bunch of offense as well, even hits a lethal injection at one point, gets the lethal combination at one point. These things always look cool, I think. The finish sort of comes. So Roosh's finisher is called the Bull's Horns. It's the opponent is sitting up in the corner and he hits a really, it actually looks really good. It sounds simple, but so I think he's wearing like cowboy style boots and he just sprints across the ring and he's like a 240 pound man, but he can really move. And it's just a running double drop kick as you're sitting in the corner. I think it looks cool. So he goes for it this time, but Lethal hits him, sort of catches it, and which was nice, and hit a spine buster. And then hitting the lethal injection here at the very end for a really nice near fall. Like the lethal injection, I feel like it's fairly protected. There's not a lot of kickouts. So this was a pretty good spot for one, I thought. And then we get Roosh does connect with his finisher, but Lethal rolls out of the ring, which made him look like a genius. Commentary really put this over as well, because he's basically knocked out. But it's like he's just aware enough that when he falls over, he needs to fall over and like make one half roll to get out of the ring. And he does. So that looked really cool. So Roosh just goes and gets him, rolls him back in the ring, puts him in the corner and hits him with his finisher one more time. And that is it. He pins him. And it was just under 20 minutes, I believe. I actually really enjoyed this match. I imagine there's people that have a problem with Roosh because his matches, you know what you're getting. It's going to be rampant cheating and shortcuts. But I, for one, again, it's not every match. It's not all the time. It's with one group when they're involved. And I think there's room for that. And it also gives an opportunity for a super like babyface group like the Foundation, who are the opposite. They just want a whole company that's following the rules and is honorable. And you shake your hand and you try your best and you shake your hand again after, sort of thing. So it builds to a pretty cool dynamic. And so far, LFI are the dominant sort of faction. But you see the Foundation are starting to take some of the gold, right? Their goal was to take it all tonight, but they got the tag team championship and they got the TV championship now. So that is a start, right? But yeah, so I really like this match, actually. I thought it was a really strong main event, but it wasn't over yet because Brody King walks out, who I really like, a big man, crazy tattoos, giant beard. I think he's one of the guys they should focus on in this company, and it looks like maybe they are. So he comes out sort of somewhat sarcastically, I guess, congratulates Roosh for making an entire match without getting his family involved, because actually there was nobody else. It was just Roosh cheating for himself, basically. And he's basically saying that every time King has had to come across LFI, it's the numbers game that always gets him. And so that's when he decided, and now he's got his own numbers and he didn't come alone. So Tony Deppen comes out, who's going from like the boy next door sort of underdog to, I guess he's trying to join this group now. And so they're not impressed by that. But then King's basically letting us know that that's not all the help he has. And then the next one is Homicide making his return, and Chris Dickinson, who I've seen a whole bunch on the indies. He's been around wrestling for a long time, over a decade for sure. And I think he's pretty good, really aggressive. I like him in the ring, so I'm excited to see him here. So Homicide and Dickinson come out. And they basically, with Brody King and Tony Deppen, clear the ring of the LFI members. And then so King obviously is helping Lethal up from his feet. So we think that he's there as a babyface group to sort of help Lethal and just get LFI. But then he quickly turns and clotheslines Lethal. So whether they're heels or tweeners or whatever, Homicide also picks up Lethal and gives him the cop killer, which is basically a vertebraker, which looks pretty awesome. So then that foursome of King, Homicide, Dickinson, and Deppen pose in the ring, and Rick Abani just sort of ends the show by saying a new group has formed and happy anniversary. So I thought that was a cool segment to end. I do like Brody King. I do like factions, as anyone that listens to this knows. So I kind of thought that was cool. I liked the main event match, and I really liked the segment that followed. I'm interested to see where this faction goes, especially Dickinson. Just him on a major promotion is kind of cool. I hope that he does well. Deppen and Homicide, whatever. We know what he is. He's fine. He's getting up there in age now, of course, but he can still go, I imagine. And I like Deppen. We'll see in this more aggressive pseudo heel or heel role, if it's believable for him or not, we'll see. So I'm optimistic about that, looking forward to it. So overall, this pay-per-view, I really liked some things. I really liked the main event. I really liked the Mexi Squad three-way match. I liked the, on the kickoff show or whatever they call it, the free hour, I liked the six-man tag match. I didn't like some things in here as well. I didn't like the tag team title match. I wasn't a huge fan. I'm sort of just scrolling back through it here. EC3 Briscoe, I did say I ended up liking, right? Castle Woods, I kind of liked. All right, I'm going to give this show a B. I did like some stuff on it. I would say the main events we're seeing, the Mexi Squad matches we're seeing, so you could check those out. Anyone that did watch it, I would love to hear feedback what you thought of it. I don't even know if anyone listens to any of the ROH stuff that I do. It's sort of taking a small audience we have already and probably shaving a bunch off to leaving it to the ROH fans or the ROH curious at least, but that's okay. I always say as long as there's a couple people listening, I'm good to do this. I like to talk and I like wrestling. So I'll give that a B show overall. And now that that's done, I did just want to talk about Ring of Honor, the actual television program from this week, because I did finish that up too. I can do that now, and then it won't be on the Saturday show. It'll save us a bit of time when we record on Saturdays. So I just finished watching this today, and it will be quick because not at the risk of spoiling it, I didn't like this show, so I won't focus on it very long, but let's get into it. Quinn McKay welcomes us and announces a Pure Rules gauntlet match for tonight. And all the rope breaks and closed fists will carry forward is how it'll work. So two guys start and then you beat that guy, a new guy shows up and there's six all together. And if you use all your rope breaks, they're gone. They don't reset or anything. And then that's when I realized this must have been recorded before the pay-per-view because there's not one mention here. I figured it would be, we just had an amazing show. Look at the highlights, but there's nothing. So it's as though this show, the anniversary show, didn't happen. So that already puts me not in the right mindset for this because this is clearly going to be an irrelevant show because it happened before the most recent pay-per-view they had. So already kind of starting out on a sour note for me, and let's see where it goes. So there's no promos or videos beforehand. It's just straight into the first match. But then as they're making their entrances, there is a little bit of promos happening, just sort of pre-recorded. And basically the first match is Beer City Bruiser versus Mike Bennett. And Bruiser says, people ask him why he attacked Taven and Bennett. He says he's about winning now and that Brian Malonis' partner is at a crossroads. But the Bruiser is sick and tired of being a lovable drunk who keeps losing, and he'll start his sort of new transition by beating Mike Bennett today. Bennett then gets his shot just quickly as he's entering as well, saying that he's lived clean for the past 3 years, but since he's come back to ROH, people are pushing him and they keep pushing his buttons. And tonight you're going to see a methodical, deliberate act of violence and not a random one. So nothing really there. Each just got a quick second to say something. Neither was bad. Neither was super effective. But anyways, this match happened. Bruiser attacks Bennett right before the bell. Part of Bennett's entrance, he's sort of sitting on the apron facing out. So Bruiser ran into him with his hip, and the commentary teams tried to imply like he could have broken his neck. And believe me, if you see the impact, no, he couldn't have. But anyways, so Bruiser starts out dominating the match on the outside of the ring. And this is when I noticed Matt Taven is on commentary. And at one point, he and Caprice Coleman, they're trying to say exhibition, and they both try multiple times, and neither of them can get it, so they just give up and move on, which I thought was pretty amusing to me, at least. So the Bruiser at one point starts focusing on Bennett's ankle, and I think he does an awful job, that's Mike Bennett, of selling the ankle. He thinks walking on tiptoes on that foot is selling it, I guess. I don't know, I'm not a fan of his, so maybe I'm nitpicking him more than I should, but I didn't think he did a good job selling it. The finish comes. Bruiser goes under the ring, takes out a beer bottle because he had hit, I think, Taven with a bottle before. So he takes one out from under the ring, smashes it on the ring post, and goes to bring the jagged piece in theory, I guess, to attack Mike Bennett with it. But Taven rushes down from commentary to deliver some forearms and a super kick to sort of stop him. And then Bruiser retreats and the match is thrown out, so it's a non-finish. Not only is it a match I don't really want to see, it's another non-finish. So I wasn't thrilled with this opener, to say the least. I didn't enjoy it at all. Bruiser was moving slowly, and I know he normally does, but I felt like he was slower than usual. And at one point in this match, he was really having a battle with his trunks, just having to hike them up on a regular basis. So like a spot where you're supposed to be selling offense and you're worried about getting your trunks back up. So that was a little bit annoying. He controlled a lot of the beginning of this match, which is never exciting for me. It's pretty basic plodding offense. Bennett is fine, but he's not a good enough guy to carry this match, in my opinion. I thought it was really boring. It doesn't help that I have no interest in either of their storylines either. And to add to that, there's no finish, right? So I just personally, I'm not interested in Bennett and Taven, especially as baby faces. I find they're just inherently not likable. So until they turn heel and then I may love them, I just can't connect with them as baby faces. And Bruiser is just the big veteran enhancement talent, with he's never involved in anything important. So this show is clearly just like a placeholder, like a time filler until they can get back. And that's pretty obvious at this point. And it's obvious in the next match as well, which we'll talk about now. So it is the six-man gauntlet match. Pure wrestling rules apply here. So it's Dante Caballero versus Will Ferrara versus Eric Martin versus Wheeler Yuta versus Fred Yehi versus world-famous CB. So right there, right? That's a star-studded group right there. I'm sorry, I'm being sarcastic. There is nobody of any consequence, no offense to any of them, in this match. So clearly, nobody that's involved in anything important is on this show at all. So it starts out, I have very few notes on this. It starts out with Ferrara versus Dante Caballero. And it's basically literally the teacher and the student, because Caballero is one of their trainees at whatever their dojo or whatever they call it. And Ferrara is one of the trainers there. So that's basically what you're seeing here, is just like a training match, essentially. Basic stuff, nothing crazy. Caballero looked okay, didn't look great, to be honest. I did like Ferrara executed what they called a wrist lock driver, which looked really awesome. It's just basically a wrist lock and you just pull the guy towards the ground really fast. And I don't know, maybe Caballero was selling it well, but anyways, Ferrara pins him with a jackknife pin. So then world famous CB is out, and commentary overreact to him like it was, I don't know, Goldberg coming out. I don't know, that's not a great example, but somebody amazing coming out. And it's famous CB, which if you don't know is Cheeseburger, which if you don't know is a veteran, like 130 pound wrestler, literally, possibly. Anyways, he ends up pinning Ferrara with the Sugar Bear pin. They tried to call it a power bomb. It's not, it's like a short wrist lock kind of power bomb, but it's from about waist height, so not really. And then he just goes right into a cover from there. So CB is in, and then Eric Martin enters, and I don't have any idea who he is, but I think he did wrestle in one match on TV before, but he's another guy from their training center. So he's in there wrestling CB, and basically he ends up tapping out to some submission of CB's, which I also thought didn't look very good, but he does have it named. I forget what it's called, so it's clearly a signature move of his. But anyways, he dispatches of Eric Martin fairly quickly. And then we get Wheeler Yuta, who I have seen a few times, and I do quite like him. His thing is sort of, he's the decoder. So whatever your offensive plans are, he's going to decode it and sort of come up with the perfect counter strategy for it, which I kind of like that idea. So at this point, when he enters, CB has no rope breaks left since he's been in the ring already for a while. So Yuta jumps off the top and hits a DDT to world famous CB, I believe it is, for the win. Again, no real details in there. There was some wrestling happened in between, but I'm just getting to finishes and who comes in when. So then obviously it ends with Fred Yehi comes in last, and he starts working on Yuta's shoulder. And he does some pretty cool stuff that really looks like he's like dislocating things. So I thought that was kind of neat. And basically, Yehi ends up winning here. He had put on the Koji clutch. This was his second time putting it on. And so he had been selling an injured ankle. And Yuta, it was pretty smart, actually, the decoder. It makes sense. So in the Koji clutch, he would still be able to grab Yehi's bad foot and would just yank on the ankle, right, and hurt it. So for the finish, the Koji clutch is on. And Yuta's doing that again because he's already gotten a break out of that. And Yehi quickly reverses and goes to the other side so that that foot is no longer accessible. And Yuta fairly quickly taps out to the hold. For me, the Yuta-Yehi part was the most interesting fall by far. I quite enjoyed their interaction, actually. But a whole bunch of this wasn't very exciting. Two of the participants are trainees, and it was a nice way to get them some TV time. I get that. That's not my main concern. They got on TV. They got a little bit of action against their trainers and whatever, that's good. It's going to help them in the long run. It doesn't mean it was amazing for me to watch, and it wasn't. And Ferrara and CB have barely been on TV in several months. Yehi and Yuta were really the only ones with any presence on the show, so I figured they would be kind of there at the end, and they were. Overall, though, not a very good match. Kind of disappointing. Very little of it caught my attention. There's nothing anyone needs to go out and see. So overall, this show, I think you can tell I wasn't a fan. I often say like this 50-minute show, because I watch it without commercials, flies by, but this one easily felt like a two-hour show. Bennett is the biggest star on an episode of a wrestling show, then that's a problem for me. And he was, if you look at who is on this show. Two random matches with C-list talent, no offense. No tie-in or even a mention to the major pay-per-view that just happened 2 days ago. This felt a little bit too similar to me to episodes that Jack and I tried to watch back before the pandemic and before the reboot that were just unwatchable, in my opinion. So I'm hoping that's not the case. This was not a good week, this episode. Hopefully it's just a blip on the radar, because I have enjoyed ROH since I started covering it 7 or 8 months ago. This was, I think, the worst episode I've seen so far. I'm pretty confident saying that. Sadly, I'm giving it a very rare for me, a grade in the D level, but I will give it a D plus. So not a great episode. Pay-per-view was pretty good. Episode of TV was not very good. That's me covering ROH for you guys this week. I hope it was okay. I would love to hear some feedback, again, on YouTube, fnswrestling@gmail.com, or on our Instagram. You can find us. Please check out the flagship show on Saturdays if you haven't before. I'd really appreciate it. Follow us, subscribe, like, whatever it is you need to do on whatever platform would also be amazing. We appreciate any time you give us out of your week to listen to a couple of guys, just me this time, talk about wrestling. We really do appreciate it. And until probably Saturday, I hope everyone has a great week. And until then, take care.